I don't want to pay 30, 40 plus percent in income taxes. What can I do? Or what if we can create a tax structure that the more revenue, the more income you generate for your family and for your company, actually we get you thrown into a lower tax percentage? How rewarding would that be? What kind of incentive would that create for the economy in this country that the more value you create for others, the more you produce, therefore the more revenue that comes into to your company, into your employees, into your family, that you actually get rewarded by paying a less, not as high of a percentage, but less.
You're listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.
Hi, this is Ken Green, the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast. And the title of this episode is It's Tax Season. And I don't know how else to make taxes more exciting. And it's very interesting with our tax structure that you have a phenomenal year, have a lot of clients have done incredibly well, high wage W-2 earners, own small businesses or self-employed, phenomenal year for 2019 so far. I mean, we're over 10 months into the 12 months and we're terrified that the taxes are going to be outrageous. Oh my gosh, we've made too much money. And so isn't it interesting with a tax structure that you get punished and are thrown into a higher percentage bracket the more revenue you generate? And so recently the October 15th deadline has passed and now it's officially tax season. So for everyone listening to this episode that is feels like, oh my gosh, all that money is going to be transferred to the government real shortly, I don't want to pay 30, 40 plus percent in income taxes. What can I do? Or what if we can create a tax structure that the more revenue, the more income you generate for your family and for your company, actually we get you thrown into a lower tax percentage? How rewarding would that be? What kind of incentive would that create for the economy in this country that the more value you create for others, the more you produce, therefore the more revenue that comes into to your company, into your employees, into your family, that you actually get rewarded by paying a less, not as high of a percentage, but less. So this episode will go over some, it will give kind of a cursory overview of areas of how you could lower your taxes for 2019. Now, let me preface this. I am not a CPA. I am not an enrolled agent. I'm an investment advisor. I'm the host of the Engineer of Finance podcast. So run these ideas. A, you can call me and we can run it together with your current CPA and tax attorney to make sure everything's in alignment. But these are to create some questions to bring to your attention, to think about and bring to your tax professional. And then you and both you and your CPA can call me and I'd be more than happy to elaborate on different areas to take advantage of. So how can we create more income for ourselves and pay less in taxes? Or I should say, you're actually going to pay more in taxes, but percentage-wise, lower your tax bracket instead of being punished and have it go up higher and higher in percentage. Now, the typical answer, I'll get to that question. Now, me and my partners will go around and educate CPAs and enrolled agents on a different way to play the financial game. But typically, when you go to a tax preparer or a CPA and say, what can I do to lower my taxes? It seems like majority of the time, the response is, oh, a qualified plan. Put your money into an IRA. Put your money into a 401k. You'll lower your taxes. Now, also, I'll tie to a Roth IRA in a little bit. But these are tax-deferred vehicles. And so, granted, to keep the numbers easy, oh, actually, we'll do this. So forget the tax bracket part, but let's just use $100,000 as an example. So say, keeping the numbers easy, because it's easy to divide with $100,000. Say you're at an effective tax bracket of 30%. And you go to talk to, it's like, what can I do with a qualified plan? And using $10,000 as a position on that, you're at a 30% tax bracket, and you're putting $10,000 into an IRA, into a SEP IRA, into a 401k, and you're at a 30% tax bracket, well, you just saved yourself $3,000 in taxes today, in income taxes. So at face value, that looks like a great strategy. Oh yeah, I just saved $3,000 in taxes. The problem is a lot of accountants I talk to, they feel like that, hey, I just saved my client $3,000 in taxes. Yes, You did today. However, that's a tax-deferred vehicle, and I'll talk about it more in a second. But at the same time, it's almost like they act like there's that $3,000 to play with. And the reality is that, no, you just cut a check to put in control of someone else through a qualified plan. So now you got a financial advisor that has it at risk in the stock market, which could be a good strategy to grow, especially if they're good at investing. But at the same time, say you're 25, 30, 35, 40, that's money that you're not going to be able to touch until you're 59 and a half. And then potentially, depending, who knows what the rules will be then, you also have rules that come with an RMD require minimum distribution at 70 and a half that'll force you to take distributions. And that's money, it's that $10,000 is gone. The money's gone. You can't use it today. You can't touch it or control it till a long, long time away. Is an effective strategy to reduce your taxes today? Potentially. At the same time, you can't touch it. And then also the question I'll ask is that if you look at our historically, our taxes, we're at a historic low right now, taxation-wise. So if you had a choice, and if you're putting this in a vehicle that's going to accumulate and compound and compound and compound, the problem is all the taxes are compounding with it. So then come retirement time, the intention is to have by far more money and by far more wealth, and now you're retired, every day is a Saturday where you get to play and enjoy life every single day if you decide not to work anymore or create or produce other things. If every day is a Saturday, you think you're going to spend less money? And if you created more wealth, do you think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket or a lower tax bracket in the future? If you think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket and you're at a lower one today, wouldn't you rather just cut, instead of shielding that $10,000 into an IRA, wouldn't it just make more sense to pay the $3,000 in taxes? Now you've got $7,000 that you get to keep and use today. But quite often I will see that response that, oh, to save in taxes, put into these qualified plans. Yes, that's one strategy. Does it have merit for some? Yes. Do I think it's the best one for most people, at least that I work with? No, I don't. I've written blogs on this. If you go to engineerofinance.com, go to that website. I have a blog where I talk about qualified plans and the financial industry and kind of poking fun at it. I say it's a marriage in hell. And the fact that when you really look how it's structured, do you think that the financial industry and the government created these vehicles for your benefit? Or do you think maybe they created it for their benefit? So that's qualified plans. What can you do if you're a small business owner or a high wage W-2 earner, you know, an employee that had a phenomenal year with income? Congratulations. The unfortunate part is because the way our tax system's structured, you're also the highest taxed of people in this country. And so what are some vehicles that you can do? So I'll talk about, say you've had a phenomenal year, you made over $400,000, strong income in this country, but you're an employee. There are vehicles out there. I'll talk about the energy sector. You know, the way that the most recent tax code has been structured, again, I'm going to emphasize, I'm not a CPA and tax attorney. Talk to me and we'll talk to your tax planner. For clarity and some more details and get their his or her buy-in or the team's buy-in on the tax strategy. But there's areas where you can go into equity partnerships on the energy sector, oil, natural gas, where what you put into that investment is a substantial write-off, potentially 100%. And so if you're putting $100,000 and you're at a 40% effective tax bracket, just keep the numbers easy, $100,000, you're going to be paying on that $100,000, $40,000 in taxes. So if you have, and I'll emphasize, I mean, long, long time ago, I got my butt handed to me in the oil and natural gas industry, but that's because I thought I was so smart back in 04, 05, and 06. Didn't have the right team around me. That's changed substantially now that I've been in the industry for so long. But at that time, I was just a full-time engineer, and I had... I just thought how great to be part of the oil and why invest in it when I could be a partner in it? And so, but I just got the wrong players back then. But there's risk to those operations. But the way the tax code is structured is that, you know, we know that we're dependent upon those fuels at this time. And if you're adverse to oil and natural gas industry, that's fine. This is not the right investment for you. But say if you see value in it and you want to be part of that club, and you've got $40,000, you know, you're using $100,000 as an example, you got $40,000 that's going into taxes no matter what. You know you're not going to get that money back. Well, now, what if you have the ability to go in on an investment like that that could have substantial returns over the next 3, 4, 5 years? And now instead of paying, you still parted with a check of $100,000, but you didn't pay the $40,000 taxes. You actually, by putting $100,000 that created, now you've got $60,000 at risk, essentially. You didn't pay the $40,000 in taxes. You put $100,000 in investment. But since you had to pay that $40,000 anyway, you really have $60,000 at risk now. So it's just a very clever strategy to think about to decrease what you're paying in taxes. If you know that you're going to be, you have a known loss, a loss opportunity cost of putting $40,000 to IRS, which you know you'll never get that money back, as opposed to risking $20,000 more by putting $100,000 into an investment like that, that had substantial returns. Oh, and by the way, on the income flows that come from that, and that investment does well, has substantial tax deductions too on the income, it might get a little bit of the gambler out of you. It's like, well, if I got a known loss of $40,000, why not put another $20,000 into this and see what this $100,000 can create? And it can create a substantial amount of wealth. That's just one strategy for an employee that has a high income. What are some other strategies outside a qualified plan? Real estate, I just got back from a phenomenal workshop. If you listen to the episode with John Schaub and Peter Fortunato did a great 2-day workshop recently over the weekend, where they're just talking about real estate. Now, real estate, predominantly most of the focus was about single-family residents, of how just on the depreciation mechanism that's inherent in the tax codes with real estate, you can create a phenomenal income stream as an employee, also owning real estate, and enjoy using the depreciation of those assets to offset income taxes. So you can have a strong income and pay very little in income tax percentage. So that's another powerful tool. Now, I can do that with you being a landlord where you actually are the manager and handle all that real estate yourself. There's also syndicated commercial real estates. You know, I work with partners. There's a lot out there in this country where you can invest. Typically, it's reserved for accredited investors, which means that individually you're making $200,000 a year consecutively for 2 years. Or if you're jointly married, it's $300,000 a year for 2 years consecutively and likely to do it again the third year. And or you're worth $1 million outside your primary residence and net worth. But you can get in with these syndicated commercial real estate entities and come in as a general partner, limited partner. And also you can enjoy a lot of that pass-through depreciation in real estate. So that's another strategy to look into. What else can you do? If you own a small business, another thing to look at is how is your company structured? The longest time when I first started my company, I was just a sole proprietor. Did not have an LLC. So there's two things working against me as a sole prop. Not only do I have the self-employment tax, so for payroll, essentially, to kind of break down for those listening that aren't familiar with the employer structure, if you have a job where you work full time, your employer is paying half of your payroll tax, which is about 7.5%, and then you're paying the other 7.5% for a combined of 15%. When you become self employed, for example, as a sole proprietor, not only are you subject to federal income tax and state income tax, depending upon the state you live in, you also are paying a 15% payroll tax. So I've gotten numerous calls in the past with new people sitting down with me to see if it makes sense for me to represent them, for them to become a client. It's like, I don't understand. I was at such a low federal tax bracket. Why did I pay so much in taxes? Well, it was because you're self-employed. Congratulations for having that entrepreneur in you. Unfortunately, you're the highest tax of entities, essentially. You're a small business and you're self-employed because you're paying a 15% payroll tax. You're paying it being the employer and you're paying it being the employee. So depending upon what your income level is for your company, what can be a great strategy is to look at what would make sense to create an entity. Now, my company, to help people learn through me, I mean, I have a limited liability company that was structured in the state of Nevada. And still, as for a while, I would file with the IRS as what was known as a disregarded entity. So it's essentially treat me as I'm self-employed, as a sole proprietor. I mean, so I still was hit with that self-employment tax of 15%. Now, at some point in time, it made sense to file with the IRS as what's known as an S-corp election. And so by doing so, now it changes the game a little bit. So the company pays me a salary because I'm employee of the company. But then the company also creates distributions to me, which the distribution side does not have a self-employment tax associated with it. So what happened? And just to give an idea so people can break down the numbers, say you have a company that is an LLC or you're a sole prop and it netted $100,000. Well, if that's all coming in, that's just on self-employment tax, on payroll tax, you're paying $15,000 in payroll tax. What if he had the ability to just keep the numbers easy? This is, again, not tax advice. It's just an education. $50,000 goes to you in salary, and then $50,000 over that year goes to you in distributions. $50,000 off the table for payroll tax. That's $7,500 that's not going to the government. How powerful would that strategy be to reduce your taxes and use it so you can put back into your company? Or it could be finally pay yourself first. You have profit first for your company. Your family will be happy that you have an additional $600 a month to buy and spend in the marketplace to enhance your lifestyle or put into savings. Or my favorite strategy, which you've heard me talk about in numerous episodes, is I love the Bankosaurus. What a brilliant way to put your money into a vehicle that's going to grow income tax, if designed correctly, that's going to grow income tax free for the rest of your life. And then also protect the income that would be generated for your family in case you died and pay off a huge, huge death benefit. So that's something for people to consider that are self-employed, is that maybe you're at the point to consider how you file. And the other piece of that is a C-Corp. And then there's situations where it makes a lot of sense where you actually have a hybrid of both. Once you start really getting up an income level of having an S-Corp and C-Corp structure. So those are some powerful ways that you can effectively lower the taxation that you're experiencing after having, or what is anticipated to be, a phenomenal year for 2019 that doesn't force you into a qualified plan. Qualified plans have their place. It's just usually the last place I'll go. I have found that the majority of my clients prefer to lower their tax bracket and not put it into something that puts them in a corner with a lot of rules. They'd rather be able to use that money today and repurpose it in a way that they can use now, not 10, 20, 30 plus years down the road. And who knows what the tax rules will be down at that point in time. So what else can you do potentially as a small company or a big company? What I love educating people on, I do this with the most boring product ever, is like, how can we restructure your boring auto insurance, self-insure a little bit, which means raise your deductibles. I mean, if you've got thousands sitting in savings and thousands of dollars, why run a small deductible on your car? Why $500? Trust me, if you make a claim and people call in, it's going to be out very, very shortly. I'm putting out a little tiny booklet called The Insider Secrets to the Auto Insurance Industry. Just trust me, if you have a diminishing deductible that goes down to zero and you take advantage of that claim, trust me, you paid for it. And so by self-insuring a little bit and going up and increasing your deductible to a certain point, say $1,000 or $2,500, depending on your price point, insuring yourself, that's additional money you can use somewhere else. Well, your company can self-insure and create what's its own reinsurance entity. And there's a lot of involved with that under 831B. And if you have questions, please don't hesitate to reach out and shoot me an email or schedule a time to talk. But you do a reinsurance to protect from some losses out there, what a great way to self-insure to protect your company on things that you can't necessarily do through your typical property and casualty entities out there for commercial insurance. Very, very powerful tool to protect your company for risk mitigation. However, it's also a great way, by doing it the right way, with that being the right focus, it also is a way that you can save money and it can be profitable for returns and lower your tax bracket as well. As a powerful tax deduction, but again, not forcing you into a qualified plan. So there's a couple of strategies right there to consider being a small business and filing as an S-Corp or C-Corp. So what other vehicles are out there? I thought this monologue was going to be under 20 minutes. I'm going to try to keep it that way. I laugh because I still feel like I'm talking to myself in this microphone. But Tammy B has become quite popular. So she's out and about and not available for a few podcasts, a few episodes. And so I thought this would be a lot of value to create for everyone talking about the fact that it is tax season. And you've got about a six-week window or so. I mean, you've got not much time before the end of the year to reassess where you're at. And if you've had a phenomenal year, don't be upset about it and go, oh my gosh, I've made way too much money. I'd rather reverse that psychology. And so high five, you should be high fiving. It's like, okay, what do we need to do to take advantage of having such a great year and not get slaughtered in taxes? Well, I hope this brief episode gave you some good ideas of what you could do to flip the script on our IRS tax structure and embrace and be excited and not scared that you made too much money for 2019, but be excited and then find a way to repurpose and move your money in a clever way so that you're not thrown in a much higher tax bracket, paying a lot higher effective tax rate for being so successful working with the team around you to create the success that you had this year. And always love doing these podcasts. This, I hope, was a helpful episode for everyone. And look forward to the next show. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Engineer of Finance podcast with Ken Green.